This week, instead of sharing in-studio interviews with folks from our creative community, we bring you a live recording of a Border Stories event that I hosted in conjunction with the El Paso Museum of Art's La Frontera Art, People, and Place event. It was a two-day convening held in El Paso and Juarez on September 7th and 8th of this year. This event gathered artists, community members, curators, and journalists to examine the past, present, and future of our creative communities. La Frontera concluded with a live Border Stories event, which we will share with you today. Our first storyteller of the night was Saúl Armendáriz, also known as Casandro el Exótico. In Mexican lucha libre, there is a subset of wrestlers known as exóticos who compete in drag. One of the most prolific exóticos, Casandro, is from the El Paso-Juarez border. He also happens to be the first exótico to win a world title. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our homegrown exótico, Casandro.
La dualidad is my strength. Duality is my strength. Our blessed waters from the Rio Grande were one of our safest places since I was a kid. That was a joyful and very happy moment for us when we used to go to the river. Our family used to tell us and have a group conscience and say, we're having your birthday party in el Rio Grande. And we were like, okay, cool. They would have the big burro piñatas and the candies, the pastel, the mañanitas, and then all of a sudden, when the party was still going, we started enjoying what was back then the greatest swimming pool we had. It was the Rio Grande. That was our swimming pool for us. Before it was a division, it was a unifying Rio Grande. In the Rio Grande, we started playing in the trees, and my sister used to slide and say, yo soy Tarzan, and going to the water. And I was like, yo soy Cheetah, and going to the water. And we play around. Nothing happened to us. We were taught to be very respectful of the waters. But that was our safe place. It was beautiful to hang around, to have the whole family there with us and everything. That Rio Grande was life to me. And then the Rio Grande was death to me. I used to have this tío by his name was Manuel, but we always called him Tecate. My tío Manuel, now I know he was struggling with addiction, but he was such a good guy. For me, it's about this fatherless, fractured little boy from the barrio. So I didn't have a father figure. And my tío Manuel was my father in those days. He would come to the house, and we knew that he was coming because he would chiflar, shh, shh, and we knew he was coming. And we knew we could run out, and we would run out, and there he was, con todos los dulces, candies, candies. You never saw him sad. I always saw him encouraging words. I always saw him giving his best. But then my tío was a very good man. One day, in the river, somebody had pushed another friend of him. My tío, without thinking, jumped to save him. The man, he survived. It took 13 days to find my tío in the compuestas of San Elizario and Clint. My tío was wearing jeans and a beige shirt. But after being 13 days in the waters, he was unrecognizable. We knew that he was wearing zapatos de gamuza. And we knew that when my father went to identify him at R.E. Thomason Hospital back then, la bastilla de su pantalón tenía orange thread. And that's how my uncle got identified. The whole community came together when we were still hunting for my father. We're from the Colonia Progresista. So in the store, everybody used to go to the store y miraban un jar que decía donations to continue looking for Tecate. And the kids would say, me da un chicle y una paleta. And as soon as they would see that, they were like, no, no quiero, es para que ayuden a buscar a Tecate. That's how much my tío was loving our community. Because my tío was a giver. Trabajó muchos años en Publicaciones Juárez. And so we couldn't even take him to church. Now I know the truth. Because he was an addict and the church wouldn't allow him to go there. They say that it was because he was already muy descompuesto. And those are the secrets that went into the familia that we never know what happened to him. We just knew we had lost my tío. Yesterday, I talked to my tío's brother, and he was telling me the truth. He's like, I finally can tell you the truth. Your tío, he didn't jump into the river. He was thrown to the river by his friends from La Colonia Progresista. And that just got me. Last night I was like, what? He's like, yeah, they wanted to kill him. And they did. But it brought the family together, and we got to enjoy his life. 1 year before he passed away, my cousin, his name is Fernando, and he was 5 years old. And we lived in a Progresista, and this lady, Doña Valdo, she sold stoves, refrigerator, calentones, everything. Fernandito was 5 years old, and Tasha was four, una gringuita bonita, 4 years old. Back in the days, it was the little kids were trying to be friends, and they were playing, and we couldn't find them one day. And we get the call, where are the kids? Where are the kids? And we're looking everywhere. We're looking everywhere. And then the grandma opens the refrigerator, and both of the kids fell on her. The little girl, she died instantly. I remember I was still in the in a 1970 Mustang car when we drove de la Progresista hasta el Hospital General with Fernandito en los brazos, and we were crying, and we didn't know what it was. I was 6, 7 years old, and when we got to the hospital, they took him inside, and it didn't take not even a minute to come back, and he was gone. That was two already. That was his son, and it's my tío. And now, in my family, my brother is Fernando, my nephew is Fernando, my niece is Fernanda, and the journey continues as we honor our family. See, because we come from the abuelitas, el amor de las abuelitas. You know, everybody, we have our own medicine. And for me, our abuelitas were the best medicine that they could give us, just to show up, just to be there. Even though it's sad what's happening today, but I will never, never disconnect from that river, because something always will take me back to the rivers, regardless if there's a gate, a fence, anything. The river is ours. Es de la madre tierra. También Ciudad Juárez has seen me grown. Back in 1986, when I was 16 years old. This October the 15th, I will be celebrating 30 years in my wrestling anniversary. And yeah, this little boy that has been physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and sexual abuse from the age of 7 to the age of 17 has now been a 3-time world champion, have wrestled at the Louvre, just did the world premiere of my documentary in Cannes Film Festival in France. We're going to debut it in MoMA, New York, November the 1st. And then it's coming. I'll bring it to El Paso. We have to see it. It's Chuco Pride. This is my story about our barrio. Que nunca se me olvide de donde vengo. I never want to forget where I came from. And this is it. Lo mejor que ha dado Juárez, Ciudad Juárez y Casandro. Gracias.
Thank you, Casandro. Our next guest is Estine Davis. She is the owner of Estine's Eastside Barbershop, located on the corner of Piedras and Alameda Streets. For decades, she has been the barber go-to for many El Pasoans. Born in Pendleton, Texas, her family moved to El Paso when she was 6 years old, and Ms. Davis began cutting hair at Fort Bliss in the 1950s. Eventually, she was able to acquire the shop she runs today. Without further ado, I present to you Estine Davis.
I'm Estine Davis from Estine's Barbershop, and I didn't come from El Paso. I come from a small place called Pendleton, Texas, right out from Fort Hood, Texas, and Temple. My parents was Beulah Mae Mitchell. My father was Clark Hill, and that's the one who raised me. My mom died from childbirth of me. It was 10 of us. And now I'm the last one left. It's no more. My brother passed away 3 months ago. So El Paso and Juarez was my family home. That's where we got most of our own food and a lot of other valuable parts that we need in our home, from shoes and up. And I don't know how they guessed that, but I was their forerunner. I would go and get the sugar, flour, other different things that we need for as meat. Whenever they had a bullfight, I probably was the first one over there, unless it was the man that killed him, to get the meat. I love Juarez. When I was 9 years old, I drew a picture of a corner of a building. What made me do it? I don't ask me. I asked my art teacher, and that was Mr. Desmond. His wife was named Hetty Desmond. They taught at Douglas School. And I want to go there. He said, why, baby, why? I said, I'm tired of looking at these little funny pictures y'all drawing. I want to do something different. So I went and sat on the corner of the street. I stayed there from 9 o'clock up until 3:30. My teacher come and got me, and that was Mr. Desmond. What did you do? I said, nothing. I taken pastel colors and made this beautiful picture on the corner. And I have that picture right now in my home. I won first prize amongst Hispanic, white, and black. Why I did that, I still don't know. I did that when I won first prize. Mr. Desmond said, I think, baby, you better get up and get to running, because I think me, you're going to catch it. Because they said somebody else should have got it. Well, I said, well, I didn't ask them to give it to me. So I did. I got it. And that's at my home, and I think it's a picture over in Douglas School, the same one. Okay. Now I don't know what else to talk about. I come from a family. I come from a family of 10. And I'm still trying to carry on for this family because they believed in me, I guess. And I know God did, because if he didn't, I wouldn't be standing up here right now. All I can tell you, I love Juarez. So that is about the end of my story. And I, like I said, I'm a lady from Esteem Barbershop, and I went to school in Tyler, Texas. And I thank you for inviting me. I thank you for letting me be able to get up and do something that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I did go to school at
Texas Western.
That's what it was when I was going. And then I did go to community college and didn't finish neither one of them. I'm still that barber. I'm still that Esteem Davis. And I've come from a family of Beulah Mae Mitchell and Troy Hill. Thank you, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Esteem. You are listening to a special edition of State of the Arts, recorded live at the El Paso Museum of Art. Our next guest is Edgar Picasso. Edgar is born and raised on the border, and like many fronterizos, he lives his life on both sides of the border. His bicultural heritage comes through in his art. He takes part in projects that celebrate and explore the duality, uniqueness, and rawness of the region. Here is Edgar Picasso. Thank
you. Growing up, I limited my travels to Mexico and the U.S., so I really never needed to explain where I came from. If I went to Mexico, I was a norteño. If I went to the U.S., I was just a Texan. But a few years ago, when I was a student at the University of Texas at El Paso, I was a part of a study abroad program, and I lived in Europe for a few months. And that was the first time that I really had to explain to other people where I came from, you know? A lot of them didn't have any kind of background on the Mexican-American relationship, so they would ask me, why do you speak Spanish if you're from the U.S.? So I would have to tell them, you know, like, well, I'm Mexican-American, I grew up on the border, I go back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. There's other people that had a little bit of background information on what the Mexican-American relationships are like. They would ask me, like, are you a Chicano or are you Hispanic? How do you, like, so they just started asking all these questions that I had never really asked myself. One of the questions that they always asked was, are you more Mexican or are you more American? So when I came back to the border, I came back with kind of like an identity crisis. I didn't know what was going on, but I was very open to experience a border with fresh eyes, now that I had all these questions being asked. And when I came back, it was just a little bit after the violence in Juarez had diminished a little bit. So we saw a lot of people coming in from out of town, a lot of artists, journalists, that came to see what was going on the border. And one of these people that came, he's a professor at UTEP, British-American guy that lived in Mexico City for a long time, spoke fluent Spanish, very well-read. He knew way more about the border region than I did, so we had really interesting talks about what he had read. He told me a lot about the geography, about the history, the politics, and I wouldn't return talk about my experience of living on the border for 30 years. We were having this conversation one time, and I called myself a fronterizo, and I think it was the first time that I used that term in front of him, and he just looked at me and was like, why do you use that term, fronterizo? I'm like, well, I don't know, I'm from La Frontera, so I'm a fronterizo, and he was like, no, that's such a weird term to give yourself. It doesn't really tell anything of where you're from, or it doesn't explain anything. There's so many other fronteras. Like, why would you call yourself fronterizo? And I'm like, I mean, first of all, don't question why I decide to call myself. Second of all, I guess I didn't know what to answer. You know, I had never really thought about, like, what makes me a fronterizo and why I would decide to call myself a fronterizo. So after the talk, crossing back and forth all the time, I started to think about what it means to live on the border and what it means to be a fronterizo. So personally, the first time that I crossed the border, I hadn't even been born. I was in my mom's womb. I grew up in Juarez in the 90s, like a kid of NAFTA, hearing stories about women getting murdered. I didn't know what was going on at that time. I was super little, but it was in the background. You know, it was like something that I heard since I was super little. Being from the border also means that when my family decided to move to El Paso a couple years later, 9/11 happened, and the border was closed for the first time, and the only time that I remember that happening. Being from the border also means that when I ditched high school, I didn't go to the mall. I would go to another country. Being from the border also means that you can see pachucos, you can see cholos, you can see cowboys, you can see rarámuris all in one day. Being from the border means that we know that we're not just trafficking weapons and drugs across the border, but we're trafficking ideas and thoughts and feelings and people, you know. Being from the border means that you go back and forth because there's family across, because you have a boyfriend across, because you want to go shopping across, that you want to go to a concert across, you decide to fly out of Juarez because it's cheaper to go to Mexico from Juarez, or you decide to fly from the El Paso airport. So being from Juarez also means that my loved ones have experienced gender violence and are victims of immigration policies and have been victims of the drug war. But more importantly, being a fronterizo means that we go back and forth, and every time we cross, we're not just going to another country, we're actually, it's like a, kind of like a portal, we're going to another reality, you know, and we're living through that reality, those two realities back and forth, and there's people that have made that their life. I will probably never have the opportunity to talk to the Europeans that I met and better explain what being from the border means, and I will never be able to tell the professor that I met why I call myself a fronterizo, because he decided to ask me to block him because my opinions about his commentaries about the border were too vile for him. But there's two things that I learned from those experiences. And the first one is that it's very necessary that as a border person, we create our own identities and we define ourselves, because if we wouldn't do it, there's gonna be people from outside coming in and creating an identity for us that meets their narrative. And second, that the border experience is, in spite of the harsh background and everything that comes with it, it's not a representation of the reputation that we have. It's more an example of what a binational and bicultural community can be. And like fellow fronteriza Gloria and Saldúa said at the end of one of her poems, to survive the borderlands, you must live sin fronteras, via crossroads. Thank you.
Thank you, Edgar. Our next guest is Gaspar Enriquez. He's a world-renowned El Paso-based artist born in Segundo Barrio. In addition to creating his own art, Enriquez was a dedicated educator who taught art at El Paso's Bowie High School for 34 years. His work is sought after by collectors, and his work has been exhibited in numerous galleries around the United States, including the El Paso Museum of Art.
I was born and raised in El Segundo. If you don't know where El Segundo is, it would be on the other side of Paisano. Growing up, it was natural and normal for me to take the bus and go visit my grandparents in Juarez. And I would stay there for the weekend. What I would do, I would go walk the streets in Juarez, go get a haircut, go to a coffee shop. There was a coffee store there on 16 de Septiembre. And you walked in there, and it was hundreds of types of coffees. It smelled better than Starbucks. But I would go in there, and I would buy El Café del Chango. I don't know if you're familiar with El Café del Chango, but it was my grandfather's favorite coffee. So I would take this coffee to my grandfather, where they lived. I liked to go to my grandfather's and grandmother's house because there was lots of things to draw, and that's where I did all my drawings. At the end of the weekend, on the Sunday, I would come back to the other part of my life, which was El Segundo. We used to live in the projects, the Tellez projects. In these projects, there was a man, or it was a couple, that moved about three doors from us. He was my neighbor. And this neighbor happens to teach at the same school that I was going to. And this neighbor taught art. And I got to know him, and he offered me and a friend and his girlfriend a ride to school every morning, which was great, because here he was an art teacher that inspired me, because that's what I really wanted to be, is an artist. He would give me guidance and would help me with my drawings. But after a while, he moved, or they both moved to San Antonio. And he became a professor there at the university. Well, actually, it was at San Antonio College. He also became a very well-known Chicano artist. Obviously, I became an artist, a Chicano artist, and a teacher that taught at the same neighborhood I grew up in. So all the students that I used to have were kind of a replica of me when I was growing up. But I never forgot this man who influenced me and through fate became my mentor and my role model. But throughout the years, I lost track of him. And then while I was teaching at Bowie High School, there was this young lady that introduced herself to me, and she was his niece. And his niece told me that he was very ill. I tried to communicate with him, but I was unsuccessful at communicating with him to tell him how much influence he had had on me. Then a few weeks later, a friend of mine from San Antonio called me and said he had passed away. That meant I missed the opportunity to tell this mentor of mine how much he had influenced me in becoming an artist. And the moral of my story is the lesson that I learned not to take for granted where I came from or the people that have touched my life. His name was Mel Casas.
Thank you, Gaspar. Today's show was a special live recording of a Border Stories event that I hosted in conjunction with the El Paso Museum of Art's La Frontera Art, People, and Place event. It was a two-day convening held in El Paso and Juarez from September 7th and 8th of this year, which gathered artists, community members, curators, and journalists to examine the past, present, and future of our creative communities. La Frontera concluded with this live Border Stories event, which we've just heard. Thank you for joining us for this special edition of State of the Arts.